They are one of the largest recipients of NIH funding. Their scientists played a substantial role in developing more than half the cancer drugs approved by the FDA in the last 5 years. Dana-Farber Cancer Institute has been making one advanced cancer discovery after another for over 75 years. At Dana-Farber Cancer Institute, what we do here changes lives everywhere. Find out more at danafarber.org/everywhere.
An official U.S. complaint that China's military is hacking America's secrets.
Investing, renting, sending your kid to college? Listen to the Marketplace Money podcast. Find it on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcasts.
In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Global Perspective on Business and Economics. China today dismissed as groundless a new Pentagon report accusing the Chinese government and its military of hacking U.S. businesses and the U.S. government itself. Marketplace's China correspondent Rob Schmitz reports from Shanghai.
This is the first time the Obama administration has directly accused China's military of cyber spying on U.S. government computer systems. And according to Bo Jiuyue at the East Asian Institute of the National University of Singapore, it shows President Obama is changing his tune on China.
In the first term, you know, he was trying to work more closely with the Chinese authorities. Apparently, that approach did not go anywhere. So this time around, he wanted to try harder approach.
So how will this new tough guy approach go over among the Chinese? On the street in Shanghai, a man who only gave his surname, Yang, has his own take on the accusations and counter-accusations between the U.S. and China.
I think it's perfectly normal that both the U.S. and China spy on each other like this. It's in the national interest of both countries.
Like many Chinese, Yang says he's not worried this will hurt his country's relationship or business with the U.S. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
King of College Rankings is adding a new list to its portfolio. U.S. News & World Report comes out later today with its first ever list of online programs for veterans. With billions of dollars from the post-9/11 GI Bill up for grabs, educating veterans is big business. From the Marketplace Education Desk at WYPR in Baltimore, Amy Scott reports.
Roughly 500,000 veterans go to college on the post-9/11 GI Bill. Michael Dakduke is executive director of Student Veterans of America. A lot of them juggle work schedules and families, so he says they go online.
Online learning is very convenient for adult learners. So military veterans naturally gravitate toward programs that are online.
The colleges ranked by U.S. News & World Report may give credit for military experience and offer flexibility for students taking courses at more than one school. Eric Brooks is a data analyst at U.S. News. He says the programs are judged on several measures.
We look at things like indebtedness at graduation, graduation rates, retention rates.
Some for-profit colleges have been under scrutiny for aggressively recruiting veterans who wind up deep in debt with little to show for it. But Student Veterans of America's Michael Dakduke says colleges of all stripes can do more to help those students succeed. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Now let's do the numbers. Right now, London's FTSE 100 stock index is up 0.3%. Look at the Nikkei in Japan, up 3.5% today. Stock index futures in the U.S. are trending upward.
Looking for a good read? Visit the Big Book blog at marketplace.org. Listen to author interviews and read excerpts from the Marketplace bookshelf online at marketplace.org/thebigbook.
I just finished a new book looking at whether local zoning rules are about preserving the local charm of neighborhoods or whether the rules are discriminatory, really about keeping out the riffraff, as it were. The book's focused on New England, but the argument can be applied to Tony places nationwide. Lisa Prevost has written extensively on housing and real estate for The New York Times and other papers. Her book is called Snob Zones: Fear, Prejudice, and Real Estate. Hello, Lisa.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Take us into one of these communities that you believe practice this snob zoning. What makes it a snob zone, and how do residents explain what they're up to?
Well, what I mean by snob zone, I mean, it's kind of a provocative term, but what it means basically is zoning that's particularly restrictive on the residential end. An example would be the town of Roxbury, Connecticut, you know, a farm town that gradually attracted weekenders. But now, you know, they're a place that has become solid 4-acre zoning, and that's created some problems for them in terms of people who would like to stay in the town have to leave, and people who would like to come into the town can't afford it.
Well, let's explain that. Solid four-acre zoning. There's been an ongoing debate about whether or not the minimum lot size in Roxbury should be increased to 4 acres. That's a pretty big lot, and that would be a pretty expensive place.
Exactly. And Roxbury is one of the most expensive towns in Connecticut. And, you know, you could say that that's the way they want it.
You believe that cities and towns that make it easier, not harder, for people from all walks of life to live there, you believe those places are somehow healthier?
For a housing market, it's always healthy to have a range of housing so that people can move up the ladder. I grew up in New Hampshire, and I remember when the small towns did have the bank president living in the same place where the farm laborers lived. And we have lost a lot of that through suburbanization. And as we see the deepening inequities between incomes, I think that's reinforced by some of this zoning.
Lisa, some of the protagonists in your book are developers who, by definition, like to develop land. Do you worry that you're making an argument for ultimately less green space and more sprawl?
I don't think so at all. I don't think that making room for multifamily housing has to come at the expense of the environment. And in fact, the best way to build this housing is to put it in areas that are already built up. And if you do that, then you have less of an impact on the environment. I think what hurts the environment is large lot zoning that pushes housing development out into the countryside. I think people ought to be more worried about that.
Journalist Lisa Prevost has contributed to the New York Times and the Boston Globe. Her new book is called Snob Zones. Lisa, thank you.
Thank you.
And I think we're about to cast upon the world a lot more kids named Bo, Ty, or Di, as in Diana. A job search blog called The Ladders thinks it's uncovered this association. The shorter your first name, the bigger your paycheck. The longer your first name, the more meager your income, which seemed bizarre. Until I remembered I have a boss whose first name is simply the letter J, although we do call him JJ for short. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.